Can you all hear me okay? Hello?
Yes, great. Good morning, everyone over in 146 as well. Great to have you with us too. Has anyone here ever made the same mistake twice? You don't have to raise your hand. So just this week, I was helping, doing some tidy up, and there was a bit of a party going on around here this week, and there were some balloons that needed tidying away. I ended up helping out. There were a whole big pile of balloons that were starting to look a little bit sad and sorry for themselves. And I was on the tidy up task, and the easiest way to tidy up a whole big, like, bin bag full of balloons, just get a pair of scissors and pop, pop, pop away. And I was happily popping away going, this is going to be such a quick and easy job. This is so easy. Unbeknownst to me, two of the balloons had confetti inside. And I realized when pop, 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 one of them created a beautiful circle of little golden discs that all just appeared around me. And I thought, this job's not quite as easy as I thought it might be. And it was also around this time I noticed there was a second one. And I thought to myself, when I pop the second one, I'm going to be really careful this time. Really careful, because this is just too much work, isn't it? This is such a lot of effort. I'm going to be sweeping all these up for the next 5 minutes. So when I pop the second one, I'm going to be really gentle, like really gentle. I'm going to make the teeniest, tiniest hole right near the top so that, pop, it went. It just exploded. There was a second giant confetti circle around me. As I was thinking to myself, this is going to go way better than last time. I had even more sweeping up to do. And I had 5 minutes of sweeping up little golden circle bits, thinking to myself, there's a sermon analogy in this. Always, there always is. I think I'm not alone in saying that I've made more than one mistake. And I'm also not alone in making the same mistake more than one time. We're working our way through Genesis, and I'm going to read Genesis chapter 20. And when you read it, you'll probably think, haven't we read something like this before? And the answer is yes. So we will talk about that. But we're going to be reading from Genesis chapter 20. I'm just going to read through the whole thing, and then we're going to get stuck into it. Now, Abraham moved on from there into the region of the Negev and lived near Kadesh and Shur. For a while he stayed in Gerar, and then Abraham said of his wife Sarah, she is my sister. Then Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent for Sarah and took her. But God came to Abimelech in a dream one night and said to him, you are as good as dead because of the woman you have taken. She is a married woman. Now Abimelech had not gone near her. So he said, Lord, how will you destroy an innocent nation? Sorry, Lord, will you destroy an innocent nation? Did he not say to me, she is my sister? And didn't she say also, he is my brother? I have done this with a clear conscience and clean hands. And God said to him in the dream, yes, I know you did this with a clear conscience. And so I have kept you from sinning against me. That is why I did not let you touch her. Now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not return her, you will be sure, you may be sure, that you and all who belong to you will die. Early the next morning, Abimelech summoned all his officials, and when he told them all that had happened, they were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham in and said, what have you done to us? How have I wronged you that you have brought such great guilt upon me and my kingdom? You have done things to me that should never have been done. And Abimelech asked Abraham, what was your reason for doing this? Abraham replied, I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God had me wander from my father's household, I said to her, this is how you can show your love to me. Everywhere we go, say of me, he is my brother. Then Abimelech brought sheep and cattle, male and female servants, and gave them to Abraham, and he returned Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, my land is before you. Live wherever you like. To Sarah, he said, I'm giving your brother 1,000 shekels of silver. This is to cover the offense against you before all who are with you. You are completely vindicated. Then Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his female slaves, so they could have children again. For the Lord had kept all the women in Abimelech's household from conceiving because of Abraham's wife, Sarah. So, It's definitely ringing some bells, I think, for some of us. And you've got to go quite a few chapters back before you get a story that seems to line up almost overlapping with this story. If you go all the way back to chapter 12, the chapter begins with God giving those first promises to Abraham. He is set out from his father's, the land of his fathers, where he was born and where he grew up. He is traveling in tents with the rest of his family. And out in the middle of nowhere, God speaks to him and says, I'm going to give these promises to you. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to give you children. And through your children, blessing is going to come to all the nations. And in that same chapter, it says, that's the one that Jensen spoke on a few weeks back, that at the same time, as soon as he arrived in this place that God had promised that he would provide to him, where he would receive these offspring, he immediately has to leave. There's a famine in the land. They go down to Egypt. And it's in Egypt is the first time we hear the story that Abraham says of Sarah, his wife, she is my sister. So we've definitely got a big, strong link between these two passages that happened a long time earlier. And yet, a lot of things have happened in between. Real quick recap. He left his family home in Genesis 11. In Genesis 12, God spoke those promises to him. And then he goes into Egypt, as we mentioned. And he comes out of it really well off. For those who aren't aware, it pretty much works out exactly the same as this. And then, as God moves on in the story, God keeps reiterating those promises to him, even though he doesn't have a child at that point. In Genesis chapter 15, God makes a covenant with Abraham. He promises, I am going to make this happen. I am going to give you a child. You are going to receive that blessing, and it is going to be passed on through your children. And then in chapter 16, immediately after those promises, that's when he sleeps with his female slave, Hagar, and has a son called Ishmael. And that is the one that God says in chapter 17, it's not going to be through him. You're now going to be Abraham. You're going to be the father of many nations, but it's not through him. You've got to keep trusting. It is going to be through your wife with Sarah and yourself that this blessing is going to come. And so chapter 17 was all about circumcision and that covenant of sticking to the promises and trusting in those promises of God. And so then we have that whole thing about the visitors came and said, it's nearly time. God appears to Abraham in chapter 18 and says, you are going to have a son, and it's nearly about to happen. It's happening about in less than a year's time. When I come back, you will have a son. And then the story of Lot in Sodom and the destruction of Sodom happened in chapter 19. And then here we are. He's moving on. He's still in that land that God had promised him. He's still traveling, living in a tent. And then he's somewhat retracing his steps. The chapter starts by talking about him heading south. It talks about him heading to the Negev, which is towards Egypt, where last time there was a famine, and that's why he was heading. It doesn't mention a famine this time, but it says this is what he does. He sets out in this direction, and he's heading down there. One of the big differences is time. So it mentions when he first sets out, Abraham is, it mentions in the story, he is 75 years old. At this point in the story, he is 99. Nearly 25 years have passed, and he's retracing the same steps, and his behavior, the things that he does, seem to repeat. So we're way back in chapter 12, he set off and headed towards Egypt, and he said that Sarah was his sister. And then he does it again. He's heading south, and it says all the details it gives us here. In verse 2, Abraham said of his wife, she is my sister. And the similar thing starts to happen. So we're going to look at Abraham's character a little bit, and then we're going to look at God's character, because if you feel uncomfortable reading this passage, that's great. That's really good. I always want to say, if we're engaging with the Bible, it's going to bump up against what we think and what we feel, what we believe and what we know. That's okay. That's normal. And, you know, there are plenty of people who only, if they're reading through the Bible, get this far and say, this is the second time this has happened. Why would I want to listen to a God who acts like this? Because one way you could retell this story is Abraham turns up in a place, he lies about something or doesn't tell the whole truth, and as a result, God threatens this bloke who's showing him hospitality and generosity, who he's living with. God threatens this king, Abimelech, and says, things are going to go real bad for you if you don't turn your ways around. And Abimelech says, but I'm innocent. And then as a result, Abraham comes out of this ahead in terms of money and possessions. And it's Abraham who's the one who has to bless Abimelech at the end of the chapter. What's going on there? Firstly, let's look at Abraham. Why is he acting this way? So one of the things that, you know, we're looking back to chapter 12, but this is also immediately preceding chapter 19. One of the first things I noticed that you can't see if you're studying it in English, because it's hidden away in there, is right at the beginning. It says, Abraham moved from there into the region of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. And for a while, he stayed in Gerar. Now, that word stayed is staying in a tent. It doesn't mean he moves in. It doesn't mean he gets an Airbnb. It means he and everything he possesses, everyone he knows, his whole family are together, and they're moving into this region. And when they're staying there, they're living in a land that other people live in. There are cities and there are towns. There are people who own this land. There are people who live in this land. And this word, to stay in this land, or in other translations it says stay as an alien or a foreigner in this land, is exactly the same word that we just read in Genesis chapter 19, verse 9, when the people of Sodom describe Lot. They say, why should we, when Lot calls out to them and says, don't do this wicked and evil thing that you're trying to do, they say to him, you're a foreigner. You're just a journeying person living in amongst us. Why should we listen to you? And this is exactly the same kind of situation that Abraham is in time and time and time again. From that beginning that we said, he's now been living in a tent for 25 years. Hands up who's been on a 25-year camping holiday. Anybody? No? 2 weeks maximum, I think, and then we're all ready for a solid roof over our head, right? And central heating. So he's been doing this for a long time. And this chapter demonstrates he's repeating the same kind of behaviors. Again, the same things that he said back in chapter 12 when he was 75. He goes into this land. And this is the thing. You have to wait until chapter 20 to get a real explanation from him when he explains to Abimelech at the end, why have you done this? He really starts to open up. And he's motivated by fear. Did you see that when we read from right towards the end? Abraham replies to himself and he says, I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. When that comes right after the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, you see how the way that Abraham feels and the way that he's living, he sees a world, or at least he believes he is living in a place just like Sodom. People do what they want, and they take what they want, and he's scared, and he's afraid. And that is motivating his actions here. And he says, this is why he said this thing. It's culturally a whole rabbit hole to get down to figure out why this is any better than what was going on. But it's interesting that the thing that he describes is also a pattern that's come through the Bible right from the Garden of Eden up to now. This is yet another story that it talks about someone seeing something and wanting to take it. That this becomes a pattern throughout the Bible when people see what they want and decide to take for themselves. That's a pattern that's established from the Garden of Eden with Eve, when the snake deceives her and tells her, and it says, as she takes the fruit, it says she sees what she wants. She desires it, and she chooses to take it for herself. And if you go back to chapter 12, when Abraham goes into Egypt, and the Pharaoh of Egypt sees Sarah, Abraham's wife, it says he desires her, and it says his servants talk about how beautiful she is. He sees her, he desires her, he takes her for himself. And that this is a pattern that comes throughout. And this is what Abraham fears. He fears this kind of behavior. That he sees a world where people are living for themselves. They're seeing what they want, and they're taking it, and they don't care who they hurt on the way. And that is why he's acting this way. That seems to be what he's saying. But interestingly, he tries to justify himself. He says, technically, I'm not lying about that, that we are related. And yet, the point is, he does this thing, and he is motivated by fear. And he's trying to conceal the truth in order to preserve his life, to save himself. Possibly also to save the rest of his household as well. But he is motivated by fear. So where is this man of faith that we've been hearing about so far that has been a recurring theme from Genesis chapter 12 all the way up till now, that he was a man of faith? Where is that? And also, who is this God that we say that we love and that we worship, and that the Bible reveals his character through it? Why is he acting this way? That the story says Abimelech meets this man and this woman and is introduced that they are brother and sister. And in this culture, possibly because of you know, political alliances and things like this. Intermarrying between families was probably normal in order to maintain peace. When you guys are related, when you're a family together, then you look out for each other. In a world like we described in Sodom and Gomorrah, where everyone seems to be out for themselves, to take what they want and don't care who they hurt, it makes sense to join together and to join forces. And that this is potentially why all this intermarrying thing and giving and exchanging wives, this is why it seems like Abimelech had multiple wives in this story. And this is why in this story, he seems to be, Abimelech sees himself as doing the right thing. And we know that because he speaks in this dream. We get this revelation of this dream where God doesn't speak to Abraham in this situation. He goes to Abimelech and says to Abimelech, things are going to go bad for you because of the situation you're in. And Abimelech says, what have I done? What situation am I in that I've done anything wrong? He responds when God speaks to him in an incredible way, but he also says, what have I done wrong? He says, I am innocent in this. And interestingly, this is where we start to see a revelation of God's character. It's a weird, isn't it, up to this point? It's weird that God acts this way. Why doesn't God speak to Abraham? Why does he speak to Abimelech? Why does he say to Abimelech, you are in big trouble because you've taken this man's wife? When Abimelech says, he lied to me. He didn't tell me she was his wife. And yet, in this story, from verse 6, we start to get this really interesting revelation of what God is really like. When God says in the dream, I knew that you had a clear conscience. When Abimelech says, I had a clear mind and I had clean hands. He said, I wasn't trying to do anything wrong. And God says, I knew that about you. And that is why I kept you from sinning. Because he seems to be saying, he may have taken her into a household, but he hasn't slept with her. And that God has preserved Abimelech's righteousness. That Abimelech says, I'm not guilty here. And God says, I know that because I have protected you from that. And yet he then makes it very, very clear, this woman is this man's wife. That Abraham and Sarah are the ones that God had made the promise their offspring would bring about this blessing. And God is committed to his promises. That is something that this passage tells us. God is committed to his promises. And this is what he says. You have to return this woman. Return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you. And this is what he does. He realized, but the threat is, if he doesn't do that, if he continues to live his own way, sees what he wants, and takes it for himself, the consequences are going to be dire for him and for his entire household. And so he responds. He responds. And interestingly, Abraham in the story doesn't get a chance to respond like that, does he? God doesn't speak to Abraham. This all happens to Abimelech, the other guy, and he responds and asks Abraham to pray for him. This is what happens at the end. And the blessing that comes to Abraham as a result, he gets possessions, he gets animals, he receives slaves, he receives more silver than you can carry on your inner backpack. I can't remember if you figure out how much 1,000 shekels is, but it's not change. It's not going in your back pocket, that. He's loading him up with riches as a result of this to cover over his transgression and to say, to prove to people that I am vindicated. And that is how he describes it in the NIV there. And so we've got this really interesting examination into Abraham's character when we've seen him described as a man of faith, and yet he seems to be still living in fear. And then God is the one who, he says, cares for the downtrodden and the oppressed. He cares about people who are innocent. He cares about people who are mistreated. And in the story, it seems to be Abimelech the one who's being mistreated here, and God is against him, or seems to be against him. And yet, as we saw, that glimmer that God still cares about justice. God says to Abimelech, I protected you in the midst of this. But God is committed to his promises. The reason why he cares about this situation, the reason why God steps in and intercedes in this situation, is because even if Abraham is motivated by fear, even if he's making wrong choices, even if he's making the same choices he's been making for the last 25 years, God is committed to his promises. God's committed to God's promises. And he has promised Abraham he's going to make him into a great nation. He's going to bless the world through his offspring between him and Sarah. And it's not going to come when Abraham thinks it's going to. It's not going to come in his own time, in his own motivation, in his own yeah, in his own way, when he takes a second wife, and they say, maybe this is the way to do it. And one of the other challenges about all this relationship with his nephew Lot is probably Lot was his closest relative. Maybe he thought Lot was going to be the way that God was going to keep these promises through his descendants, through someone related to him. And yet God keeps saying, you just have to keep trusting me. And God is the one who is committed to this. God is the one who commits to us. God is the one who commits to Abraham. And that Abraham, no matter how many mistakes he makes, and if he repeats the same mistakes, God is the one who's going to work things out through him. And it's interesting that as he goes on, we see that revelation of the way that God keeps his promises. God really commits to this. And this is the thing. Abraham, if you read the New Testament, and we're going to flick ahead to Romans. I've lost my bookmark here as I'm looking for it. Abraham is described for the rest of the Bible, throughout the Bible, as a man of faith, as a man who put his trust in God, and that when push came to shove, he believed God would keep his promises. And we see him at one of his lowest points here. He's repeating the same mistakes that he's made before. He's getting himself into hot water. This is obviously not a great situation to be in. It's not great for Sarah. It's not great for him. It's certainly not great for Abimelech either, is it? He's had this visitor turn up on his doorstep, and then he gets these visions from God who's threatening his family. And it also mentions towards the end of the chapter that everyone in his family is struck with an illness. That means no one's been able to have children this whole time. And so God, it's interesting to question that, isn't it? Interesting question. What is God like, and why does he continue to do this? And what it really boils down to is God keeps his promises, and that's what a covenant is. We've talked a little bit about covenants in some of those chapters, but it's really interesting that the covenant of circumcision that we hear about in chapter 17 is one that comes later, but God makes a covenant in chapter 15 earlier, and when he speaks to Abraham, he says, God says, I am the one who's going to make this happen. Do you remember there's that weird passage where he splits animals in half, and there's this whole ancient ritual of how promises work, that two people enter into a contract together. That's what a covenant is, a promise where we're saying we're going to work together and we're going to achieve something. And God's plan is to achieve blessing and restoring that Garden of Eden promise of God and mankind reunited. And he says it's going to happen through you, Abraham, through you and your children. This is going to happen. But God is the one who promises to make it happen. That story is about God uniting himself, and it is because of him. He's committed to restoring broken people. He's committed to restoring humanity. He cares about us. He cares about every single one of us. And he always has, and he always will. And this is why I think it's great reading Genesis. You can see it right from the beginning, even in these weird, bizarre stories that don't really make sense the first time we read them. It's there. His commitment to loving no matter what is there, and his commitment to make the restoration and those promises happen is there from the beginning. He cares about those promises. I'm just going to run through a couple of other quick things. We're going to read from Romans chapter 4 and 5, because this is where it talks about Abraham in quite a bit of detail. Could do a whole other talk on this, but we haven't got time. But we're going to read from Romans chapter 4, verse 18. It says this, against all hope, Abraham in hope believed, and so became the father of many nations. Just as it is said of him, so shall your offspring be. And then in verse 23, it says, the word it was credited to him as righteousness, were written not for him alone, but also for us, to whom God will credit righteousness for us who believe in him who raised Jesus our Lord from the dead. He is delivered over to death for our sin, and was raised to life for our justification. Therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have gained access by faith into this grace in which we now stand. God's made another covenant. And one of the great things we're going to do together is we're going to break bread together, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to remember the new covenant that God made. And it's new. And at the same time, it's fulfilling those same promises to Abraham. God said, all the nations of the world will be blessed through your offspring. And this is why the offspring were important, because God was looking ahead to Jesus. the one who would come and who would vindicate all of us, who would die for all of our sins, who would be raised to life to justify us, to bring us back to God. He is the one that God was looking to when he promised to stick with Abraham through anything and to make those promises come true. So what about us? How does this apply to us? How can we be people of faith like him? Well, one of the trickiest things to do when we stop reading right at the end of chapter 20 is to say, well, this is a bit weird and a bit strange, and Abraham seems to be at his lowest point. But as we just said, when you read Romans, that's not how he's remembered. Abraham is not defined by his failures, and neither are we. Abraham refuses to let his failures define him. He's the one who continues to keep walking, keep journeying with God, keep putting his faith in God, because that is what God requires of him. He says, all I need you to do is trust in me. And God is the one who makes it work out. God is the one who will fulfill his purposes, and he demonstrates that in Jesus, the one who is willing to die, to take upon himself everything that is wrong with this world, to bring healing and restoration, and to give us the Holy Spirit, that we can have that power within us. You see, when God looks at Abraham, he doesn't see him as a failure. In this story, this is why he acts this way. He doesn't come to Abraham and judge him or waggle his finger at him. He knows that he is one who trusts. That at the moment of trial, when it's really a test, he is the one who'll put his faith in God. And he does. And this is how God treats him all the time. He always sees him like this. And because of Jesus, that's the way he always sees us too. He always puts his trust in us. Because we're not defined by our failures. We're defined by Christ's victory. And we're going to remember that as we break bread together. Now, Chris is going to come up now. So are we going straight into it? Oh, that's all right.
Thank you, Johnny.